Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
Oseo, Ogilii, Tohiju, Tohigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? Or something like that. Got a special show, as usual, for everyone this evening. Shor Charno, founder of the Circle for Change, is going to join us. She's a Métis woman who received a Bachelor of Social Work degree in Canada in 2017. Been doing, well, what you should probably think about is if you've seen that movie, The Good Doctor, she's probably somewhere between somebody normal like me and somebody with a super brain like him. Anyway, poking a little fun at you, Shor. Go ahead and say hello.
Hello, Ani.
And we've also got somebody else on the line. Who is that? I guess they're just sometimes people call in and to listen, and they don't realize they don't have to call in anyway, but they're welcome to. We'll check back with them later and see if they've got a question for you. Anyway, I think I'm pretty sure I met you in Nauvoo last August, a year ago August.
I was at the Eagles gathering in South Dakota. That was
familiar.
Yeah.
You look familiar. But anyway, go ahead and tell us, you know, I don't like to interrupt a lot. I know you've probably got a lot to say, and I'll keep the comments down but go ahead and tell us about yourself and how you got started on the path, and just let the spirit take over your brain and make it talk.
I love your style. I come from a family on both sides where there's adoption and fostering, and a lot of records are lost. So I have learned to accept there's parts of my life and history and past that are gone. The saving grace for me, my father was taken into foster care at 4, and he was given to his grandmother at some point along the journey, and she had married a Cherokee grandfather, and the Cherokee grandfather adopted my father and taught him from that point on. I don't know that Dad would really be had survived had he not had that experience, because he was born to 2 very alcoholic parents. The father that's listed on his birth certificate is also not his father. So we had kind of like this missing pieces for my dad. And then on the other side with my mom, her father was born in Algoma and in mid to northern Ontario in Canada, and was adopted twice within the first year of his birth, and that's the end of the story. We have no idea what happened after that.
Wow.
He died when she was a year old from tuberculosis. So I've come to accept that piece. The beauty is there was a huge influence my grandmother played. She came to live with us when I was just an early, like 9-10 years old, and she said, I will teach you things about the land, but you cannot tell anyone. Not even your parents. So I'm thinking, secrets with grandma. What can be wrong about this one? So I love secrets with grandma. She taught me a ton. She would tell me things like, go look for this plant that looks like this, that has this scent, that has this feel. It'll probably be growing somewhere around this other set of plants. But not a lot of the normal names. So it's really taken a long time to adapt to that as I grew up. When I was about 30, I finally presented my mother with medicine her mother had taught me how to make for arthritis, and told her the story in brief of what her mother had said and shared with me. And my mom just kind of went, sounds like grandma, and that was the end of it. No further pursuit or going further. When I was a teenager, my father saw the gift that was in me, and he took me to several different elders and medicine people to have them examine me. And they would examine me for my skill sets, for my ability, for what was inside of me, and they would say, okay, leave her with us. We're going to teach her. And so I would end up getting training, very intensive sometimes. For, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, and then they're gone, either because maybe they were passing into the ancestor world or because they had another leg of the journey they were going to be going on. Sometimes I got to work with these elders for many years, but they gave me gifts that helped my own physical well-being, coming from a very challenged upbringing. I am considered in the Western world to be a high-functioning autistic, although you would not know it to see me. So I've been in and out of a wheelchair several times in my life. I've had cancer that I survived. All of this was treated quite, when it came to the resolution part, it was treated with Indigenous medicine. And so as I grew older, I got a deeper appreciation for it. And I started fostering children from all over. And when they were coming from First Nations communities, I said, we need to learn your history as much as we can. We need to bring that back into you because I'm not going to contribute to it being lost. I've already lived through that. So I would do a lot of teaching and finding out and asking people. I became a traditional dancer. My children started to dance within a couple of years of that. And then in terms of the longer journey was learning how to apply what the elders had taught me to those children. Sometimes those children were slated as they may never be able to read. We don't know how much they're going to be able to talk. We don't know if they'll be able to live on their own. We're pretty sure they'll never be able to raise their kids if they have any. So there was a long-standing list of things they couldn't do, but the trick was they were doing a whole lot more than what everybody told us they could do. And the only thing that we could find that was different was what I was doing with them. So after breaking a cycle, I had two girls in particular I adopted. Both of them came from third generation fetal alcohol. So grandma's fetal alcohol, mom's fetal alcohol, their fetal alcohol. But when they had kids, those kids didn't have fetal alcohol. So I had gotten enough of a message across to them that it allowed for that to transmit. And it also meant for a couple of the girls, too, that their grandmother had been in care, their mother had been in care, the foster system. They had been in the foster system, and now their kids were not having to go into the foster system. They were raising them, or they were finding creative community ways to raise them. And so at that point, people started to say, hey, what are you doing? Because it's working, and we want to know what you're doing. So that's really where my journey took off. And so for over 20 years now, that's what I've been dedicated to, is to be able to teach that. So I teach basically principles of Indigenous medicine, principles of Indigenous learning, and I teach how do we bring this into a modern world. And I find people who are doing similar things, and I try to make collaborative work with them as well.
Huh. Wow, the stars fell on you, sister. That's amazing. Well, you know, we kind of knew that our nations would be broken up into. At least the Cherokee knew that our ways would be sent out like in a diaspora, and that later on we'd pull them together. And I think we're beginning to get gifts like, you know, we're seeing before Columbus. But in the process, Creator has stripped away something I guess maybe he wasn't pleased with. And, you know, Red Birdsmith said, hey, you know, he just believes it was a schooling and that we've got a spiritual mission. And you're part of that. You know, there's just no doubt about that. You know, there's a few of us out there who had traditional teachers, and but you really hit the jackpot. And then the way you were wired, when you were talking about how you were examined, and I thought, yeah, that's exactly like what my friend Ron Stoneax Jones described. You know, he was, and this was like back in the late 50s or early 60s. You know, he was there in that. I guess they call it the Tri-Cities area of Illinois. There were still Indians living along the bluffs, along the river. He was like 5 or 10 years old, and they brought National Guard and police, and they rounded all the kids up, sent half of them to Iowa and gave them fake names, took half of them to Illinois, gave them fake names, and never saw any of his friends again, but he escaped. The two people that it was a classic. Oh, you need to go to the bathroom. quick out the window and run like hell. And he eventually made it back to his grandparents, and they trained him. And but there, he said, "Well, let me ask you, sir. Did you get? Well, you were a woman. I don't know if you get the tomahawk test, or did they give you a test, or did they try to provoke you, see what you'd do?"
No, a lot of the focus was medicine and the capacity to learn. Yeah.
It was
how long, how many hours can you listen, and then how many, with what accuracy can you tell us the next day or the next week what we told you?
But they tested it. It was a manhood thing. I guess that's just what they did for men. But but anyway, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it was really, we don't know exactly why, but a lot of the times, one of the most remarkable teachers that I ended up with is the last 10 years, and that was Eddie King was his English name, Wasagizik was his Odawa name, and he came from the Odawa Madewin tradition. He was part of the North Clan lineage. He could trace his parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, and they had been part of what had happened at Indian Nation, which eventually became a prison, which became Fort Seal. And there were 287 pipe carriers and spiritual leaders that were taken because the government heard that if you took the North clans out, the people wouldn't fight. And so they took 289 plus spiritual leaders and pipe carriers, and they put them all into what is now known as Fort Seal. And with that process, it meant that there was traditional oral history going throughout the whole community. They were all in one place, and through sign language, through different translations, they were all able to work together to reconstitute certain lineages and certain traditions and certain teachings that might otherwise have been decayed further. And then out of that, less than half made it out. But he was one of the ones that had, his family had made it out, and those messages had been passed through, giving a very long lineage, 16,000 years plus lineage for Turtle Island. And my husband was a student of his for almost 30 years. And Wasa passed away to become an ancestor last year. And so the remaining students are still connected together, you know, to hopes to keep. But he had over 2,000 legends that he knew on what was called the Curve Lake Petroglyph. And so that was a sample. That was of the type of when you say hit the jackpot. Oh, man, did I ever win the lottery multiple times in my life. To be gifted with these elders. And I used to sit in their house and have tea and, you know, learn crafting and learn the legends at the same time and just, I mean, lavish amounts of attention. And often I asked why. And recently, in the last 5 years, I was speaking to a Blackfoot mixed grandmother, and she was in her late 70s, and I said, would you, you know, why? Why would I be the one that would end up having all of this, you know, multiple lineages, all these teachings? And she said, well, I think part of it is because you were homeschooled. You were never in the public system, and your family allowed you to be on the land. So I played outside on the land, different parts of land, because we moved around a lot. We were political refugees because of what my father openly taught in the 50s and 60s. And he taught about the teachings of the earth, and he taught a lot of what I'm sure his grandfather had passed on to him. And he got him in a lot of trouble, and it got our family in a lot of trouble. But he still did it because he felt it was really important. And so I continued, and I worked with my father for 25 years. Learning what he knew and passing that on as well. And so he would solve crazy problems, you know, food production problems, ways to regenerate the land through sound ceremonies, through honoring different frequencies of light is the way science would put it now. He talked about the life essentials to do with how we work our health. And so a lot of these things were shared, and that became the foundation of the work that I now do today. But just such rich knowledge that was given and shared. And now my policy is that we created something called the Circle for Change. And basically that is a place where I offer, I ask for host land. I come, I share the teachings as long as a sacred fire can be brought forward for the entire time I'm teaching, because there's so much space to be held and so much grief in the people. And I very much focus it as a peacemaking teaching, because I want people, Wassa used to say, these teachings are for humanity, right? So I want to be able to bring people together, give them an opportunity wherever to come together in a very peaceful and respectful way and focus on what's happening for our future, right? If we stay stuck in the moment and get overwhelmed by everything that's happening right now, then our future unborn ones are not going to have what they need to continue. So I really honor my father for the saying he used to say to us several hundred times a day: focus on what you're creating rather than what you're experiencing. So in every moment, am I giving my attention to what we're creating, or am I stuck in what I'm experiencing right now? And so I try as much as possible to share openly, and it's all done by donation. And if it's covered for us to be able to come and we can do it, we do it. But we really stay true to that. And any income that I earn is from a private counseling practice that I have. That's often supported by, you know, government funds and stuff. So it's very separate. It kind of stays over there. But I don't have a lot of time to put into that practice. But I will work with people who maybe have not had success in other arenas of counseling and working through things. And then we've created a whole bunch of programs, and now we're starting to learn and get help about computer to do different pieces of online courses. And again, everything will be by donation, and it will be to put back into the communities and say, okay, here's some things. So we have a grandmothers and supporting women's council that's been running for about 3 years now. And there are women from all over the world, and they are talking about best practice. So what has worked in their communities, what hasn't worked in their communities, so that others don't have to experience the same challenge. And then we hope to have a men's and grandfather's council at some point. We hope to have a youth council at some point, and then to have an elders council that maybe only meets infrequently, once a season or once a month, that we can take things that we don't have a resolution for and bring them forward. But we're just really encouraging lots of different conversations, lots of different sharing, finding a way to do it in a peaceful way, and to really honor, you know, honor what is possible to. And so we've come across a few, I would say, companions along the way that have found ways to support. And so we've come across Phil Lane Jr., Hereditary Chief Phil Lane Jr., who runs Four Worlds International Institute. And I help in any way I can. And I actively teach the 16 guiding principles that has been a working document for, I believe, over 40 years now. And it was, the guiding principles are from many, many, many gatherings through the elders of what is important to bring forward, and what's the criteria, and how can it be done in a good way for everybody, for all people. And so I actively teach and support all of the 16 guiding principles and the materials from that. to encourage more programming to come influenced to that. And I also have started working with a man by the name of John Young, who was mentored by Jake and Judy Swamp of the Tree of Peace Society. And he was also mentored by Gilbert Walking Bull of the Oglala Lakota. And I had the privilege of working with his wife in council. I still sit with her for times. And he has come out with some very interesting observations and gifts that have been passed to him. But one of them that's come forward is a recognition that there's several things we can do every day as a core routine that help us to come into connection, even if we don't have it in our families or our communities. We can kind of call it out in us. And so I've become very excited and supporting of John in that work. And he gave names to what I was doing with the kids that when we go back to those, you know, ministries and the psychiatrists, when they were saying, what did you do that led to these kids not having fetal alcohol kids? What did you do that led to these children becoming embracing of their culture? What is it that changed for them? And I didn't know what I did. I just, you know, I had a generalized idea of what I did. But when I looked at John's work and his core routines, I went, hey, I did that and that and that and that. Okay, now I've got something that everybody can understand. And it was simple practices, right? Like Thanksgiving, right? I used to teach the kids, don't let your feet hit the ground before you give thanks for a few minutes. Even if all you can say you're thankful for is that you can smell food in the house you're in. Maybe all you can say thankful for is that you're warm waking up from your bed, that you don't hear yelling and screaming, or that you can see outside a window. Whatever it is that you can genuinely feel grateful about, feel thankful for, let's start there. So that was the first practice I would introduce kids to. And then the second one is I would take them to a piece of land, and I called it land attachment when I was doing my academic work. And I said, I want you to connect with our first mother, not the human one. You know, I understand what some of you have been through, and that might not have been a positive experience, and you have no reason to trust another human being. But I will tell you, this first mother, this Mother Earth, she does not lie. She does not change her rules for anyone. She is what she is. And if you develop a relationship with her, she will develop a relationship with you. And it will benefit you your whole life. And so I would take those kids to that piece of land as often as I could till they knew every plant on the whole piece of land, where all the animals would roost, all the different medicines, the places to dip their feet. I got them really connected to that. And then I also would listen. I would really find that peaceful place inside of me, and I would listen to all their stories. No blame, no judgment, no instructions, just listening. And then maybe asking questions to take it deeper. And that was what I started every one of those kids out with that ended up moving into a different place and space in their life that they could have been. So that's, in a nutshell, the next part of the journey. I don't know where that takes us in the conversation or if there's something that's of interest to you in particular, but that's a big chunk.
Well, I was kind of speechless, and my first comment is, insist, of course, you must have a lot of free time. I don't know how you do it, but you were built for it, and you're doing it, and want to encourage you to continue to do so. Welcome to the White Roots Peace Council. And it's incredible. It's too bad we don't have some. So now there was that one person that that was with us. Let's see if we can raise. Hey, there's a somebody lurking out there from Iowa. Why don't you turn on your microphone and make a comment? I know you're out there. Come on. Sorry about that. Oh. Well, I guess they just wanted to listen. But look, speak of time. I'm sure you're busy. You said it well. And we'll fix this program so we can send you the HTML so you can link to it right from your website. And appreciate you being on the program. And it's an astounding honor.
Thank you. And I just want to kind of put it to people that if you're looking for help to put things in place, just to establish even some basic things, we've worked with places where we've got a reservation and then the ministry governments come in and said, you have to have, you know, this program. And we've done peacemaking between that, where the government program learns how to be honoring and respectful of the reservation and the people in a good way, and how the people have become over time to the place where they can be self-determining and moving forward. And we're really focusing on, let's spend less time arguing and more time problem solving around how can we get where we need to go for the youth, because we don't want to continue to lose them. So I just wanted to say, like, anybody who's looking for kind of supports around that, if you go to our website, thecircleforchange.com, we have some resource lists that we know have worked when you're, and again, we're working with whatever is universal to all communities, because we're not just dealing with North America, we're also working worldwide. And again, our intentions are always peaceful and honoring of the different traditions, but the different traditions being able to work together in a good way for what we have coming up. And so the core routines that I spoke of that John put together, we have, I think we have that listed on the website, and if not, people can email to ask about it, and we'll certainly send it. And just, I really want to encourage people. They're part of this is me simply picking up and living my gifts. I have 11 children, and we're almost to the point where we've lost track of how many grandchildren. you know, some of them biological, but most of them adopted. And the ripples are incredible. You know, there's a lot of pieces in my life that have been very, my dad used to say, character building. They've been challenging. I've survived some pretty challenging circumstances where I wasn't supposed to ever be able to walk, or I wasn't supposed to be able to live past a certain date, or they didn't think I was going to recover from this or from that. And I've been able to, each and every one of them, and I contribute that resiliency, that capacity to move through any trauma, any of the abuses I've had, any of the difficult challenges I've had. I attribute all of that to the traditional teachings, the peacemaking way, that traditional way of healing. And I just want to, if you go out on a piece of land and you close your eyes and you breathe and you really ask for that, you would be surprised how much help will come if you're open to it, no matter what the circumstances are. So I just want to really encourage people to that. And thank you so much.
Hey, you bet. And let's get back together. Hopefully sometime within a year, and let us know what's going on. But thanks so much. And good night, everybody.
Good night. Thanks so much.
Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
Sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Oklahoma Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds.
and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and/or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
Dry ground, sagebrush and mesquite and chaparral around, out away is a big dust devil moving on its way. I guess they're never still. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. The high grass and the cedar, the mighty oak and the tiny flower, the sandstone in the valley, the mountains high and running streams. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. One with me.